Tsolaba represents aroma. The companion spoken of as Avadhuta is the sense of smell. The door called Mukhya is the mouth, and Vipana is the faculty of speech. Rasagya is the sense of taste. Purport. The word Avadhuta means most free. A person is not under the rules and regulations of any injunction when he has attained the stage of Avadhuta. In other words, he can act as he likes. This Avadhuta stage is exactly like air, which does not care for any obstruction. In Bhagavad Gita it is said, Chanchalam hi manah Krishna pramati balavatridham tasyam nigraham manye vayor iva sudushkaram. The mind is restless, turbulent, obstinate, and very strong, O Krishna. And to subdue it is, it seems to me, more difficult than controlling the mind. Just as the air or wind cannot be checked by anyone, the two nostrils situated in one place enjoy the sense of smell without impediment. When the tongue is present, the mouth continually tastes all kinds of relishable foodstuffs. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimad Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Devam Gauravani Pracharine Nivasesa Sunyavari Paskatyari Shakarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Siyadvaitagrara Shiva Shadivo Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Please let me read the verse again. Nalini nalini nase gandha surava uchate grihano vadhuto mukhyasyam vipano vak rasavit rasa. Translation. The two doors named Nalini and Nalini should be known as the two nostrils, and the city named Surabha represents aroma. The companion spoken of as Avadhuta is the sense of smell. The door called Mukhya is the mouth, and Vipana is the faculty of speech. Rasagya is the sense of taste. This is yet another picture of the conditioned soul and its sense activities in the conditioned state. In the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, these different sensual activities have been represented by yet another picture, which shows how easily someone can be disturbed whose senses are not under control. When a husband comes home and meets five wives who want to drag him into their apartment or room, he certainly is disturbed. One takes his leg, the other the arm, yet another takes him by the ear. Come with me, come with me, come with me. In the same way, the mind of the conditioned soul is certainly disturbed when he is plagued by uncontrolled senses, a state which is striven for in our materialistic society. Self-expression in the material world means to be a successful sense enjoyer. And the state of one's agitation describes one's attractiveness to the opposite sex. Someone who is very active on the sensual platform, who is an expert enjoyer, is the Mahajan of today's heartless society. And those who can supply that sense enjoyment to the ever-demanding, ever-growing demands of sensual life, they are considered the true leaders of society. They are the pop stars and the politicians and the magnates of business who are behind everything else. In the Bhagavad Gita, there is a statement where it is said that the yogi, although he who is interested in spiritual life, he must be able to keep external things in the external world. In other words, he should not strive for material sense gratification. These material objects are external, and if you try to obtain happiness, which is an internal thing, by bringing these external sense objects in the grasp of your material senses, you are considered someone bereft of his internal vision. Your happiness is not there. It cannot be born out of the contact of senses with their sense objects. What you can gain by sangspasa ja means, in Sanskrit this is something means birth, and sangspasa means touch, that which is born out of the touch of senses with sense objects, that thing is not able to give you satisfaction. It is only giving you agitation, more and more and more. There's a statement which is there, that my heart is burning in the fire of sense gratification. Now, to bring this down onto the practical level of day-to-day thought, for instance, eating, if you touch the tongue to the sense objects, please let us consider it is a fleeting moment only. It is one fraction of the senses where a sweet or another taste explodes on your tongue. The rest, thing which is before that second, and the time which comes afterwards, is not really satisfaction. What comes before is work, and what, in order to obtain foodstuffs, and what comes afterwards is digestion and running to the toilet. Work, also work. So this fleeting moment of the fraction of a second, this taste which is called sanspashaja, that is work in the beginning and work in the end. It is an agitation, therefore. It is not a satisfaction, because it's one fraction of a second. Can you call this satisfaction? I mean, in daily life, if we would give someone a valuable car and say, please, I'm giving you this car, you return it after 1 second, I mean, would he be satisfied to have this car, to have obtained a valuable car? No, because it is so short. So, by all this sensual life, our minds are becoming agitated, and we fall short of the goal of human life. Because for one whose mind is unbridled, self-realization is difficult work, but he whose mind is controlled and who strives by appropriate means is assured of success. That is Krishna's opinion. He says, this is my opinion. One must deliver himself with the help of his mind and not degrade himself. The mind is a friend of the conditioned soul and his enemy as well. For him who has conquered the mind is the best of friends, but for one who has failed to do so, his mind will remain the greatest enemy. Now, this is important to understand when we approach this text. If someone is not controlled as far as his sense of smell is concerned and his sense of taste, the rasagya, and remains a slave to this pleasure called sangspasajha, his mind will be so disturbed all the time. And therefore, he will not be able to follow the Krishna conscious process. This is the main reason why people in this age cannot understand this wonderful philosophy. It is logical. We can prove it from so many points of standpoints. However, one's mind has to be a little calm in order to really appreciate the transcendental knowledge. Now, this calmness is a situation which is very advantageous to Krishna conscious life, and calmness is a situation which we can especially on such wonderful projects as Radha Desh, we can very nicely realize this. We are just coming from our Heidelberg temple, which is surrounded by a fierce battle of the modes of passion and ignorance. Day in and day out, night and day, 24 hours of the day, this battle goes on. And for devotees who live in that temple, in the midst of town, right opposite to a billiard saloon. To obtain peace of mind is not very easy. Devotees who have traveled through our temple, they said, oh, it is a quite heavy atmosphere outside. They have said like this. But here in this Radha-desh, immediately when we come, dreams are full of Krishna consciousness. The atmosphere is very light and extremely conducive to spiritual life. In such an atmosphere, we might realize much easier than anywhere else calmness of mind, which is, after all, very, very important for our own Krishna conscious development. When we hear these descriptions of Sangsparsha Ja, the life of the Kami, we often tend to not relate this so much to our existence, because we eat only at certain times of the day, and there's usually enough prasadam so that we take what we need, and we don't think so much about eating. But still, it is seen that due to our previous sensual life, our mind has not always become our dearest friend, but continues to be unpeaceful, unclear, and quite passionate. So Srila Prabhupada has, of course, given us a wonderful schedule, a wonderful new life in which we can easily become pure in mind. But in order to obtain this, a few understandings are necessary, and I would like to present a few understandings. This subject cannot be exhausted in one lecture. However, some helpful things might be said, and then we can bring it to the crescendo, means climax, by introducing our most special personality today to us and our restless minds. In the third canto, in the chapter 27, I believe it is the movements of the living entity, Lord Kapila Dev describes the self, the spiritual self, to be as the sun. And he describes the material body, or likens the material body, with a reflected sun, the sun which is on the water. So the reflected sun easily quivers if the water is agitated. However, the true sun is always steady. In a similar way, our material bodies and mind quiver. My Prabhupada says we are like fishes flapping on the beach of material existence. Our material situation is very quivering. Therefore, we are easily disturbed in mind and body. In body by diseases and by outside disturbances. It's interesting, in the science of Ayurveda disease, it is analyzed that there's all this disease in the body. In each one of your bodies, disease is lurking to catch you when you are a little weak. in body, and it breaks out, but it is already there. And in our minds, we can easily be disturbed by other living entities with whom we have to share location in time and space, within time and space. There are these three miseries which are constantly inflicted on the living entity. So therefore we quiver. Are we not like frogs jumping in a dried up well? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur asks. Because our lives are so disturbed by external things, like the frog who is disturbed by the heat and by animals of prey who like to eat him up. Our bodies and minds are constantly, looked upon by disease, by our individual neuroses, which manifest when we don't have sleep for 2 or 3 days. We are in a precarious situation. However, this is only the reflected self, the body and the mind. The soul is steady, just like the sun in the sky. The Sanskrit word used in that particular shloka, 327 and 1, is avikarat. The soul is without change. Now we might argue, but this is now the sankshaya is presented, means doubt. In a spiritual discussion, the thesis is given, and then the sankshaya, the doubt, is presented, and then some siddhanta is arrived, some conclusion, some conclusive answer. We might say, well, I don't really see how I am like the sun. There was one song in the 60s, and we all shine on like the moon, the stars and the sun. You might remember. Now, the person who sang it, John Lennon, he was always disturbed. He was a low-class fellow and finally shot by his instant karma. The soul seems to be so much changed that there is not much understanding how the soul is like the sun, who is shining on no matter if there is if we have darkness on our part of the globe, or if we have clouds covering the sun. So this sankshaya is presented. We are acting not in a spiritual way. We are constantly in move. However, that sankshaya, the doubt, is explained. No, what is really, I was already explaining a little bit about it, what is really moved is not the soul, but it is the shadow of the soul. It is the body and the mind. If the soul would have been changed, this argument is given by Srila Baladev Vidyabhushana, then we could never speak of moksha. Moksha, liberation. That we return to our original position. Something which has been changed completely, like for instance, milk has been changed into yogurt. You cannot change back into milk. Yogurt cannot be changed back into milk. That is not possible. So there is no question of returning to our original position of attaining liberation, or as we Vaishnavas say,
of returning or going back to Godhead if we would have changed our original constitutional position. No, there's something which is in this material miserable situation, our eternal soul, which is always full of bliss, full of knowledge, and which is of course constituted from the quality of eternity. This is an important point for consideration. Now, the next question, which of course arises when we look at the conditioned state of the living entity, is that old question of, then what is really acting? What is really perceiving the material duality? You have described the word, the soul as avikarat, that means unchangeable. Now, where does all this material life take place? And in the Uddhava Gita, Lord Krishna explains this complicated question by telling us that it is the false ego only who perceives material life. Interesting, isn't it? Because we identify with mind and body, therefore we are in a mess. It's the false ego which perceives our material life. Now, still in the Vedanta Sutra, and that is quoted when that verse is quoted by Srila Prabhupada in the 18th chapter, the soul is described as kata, as the doer of activities. This is a very important discussion. I think in Radha Desh, like in every other temple, this discussion has been done many times, because I know here are very philosophical minded devotees. And Srila Bhakti Charu Maharaj, he also jumps into this discussion with great vigor once you challenge him. the soul is described as a doer. Although we have described the soul as avikarat, that means the unmovable one, and we have described that material experiences and material life takes place in the mind and body due to the soul's false identification, still the soul is considered to be the kata, the doer. So how is this? This doubt can be answered like this. If the soul would not be the doer, then the Vedas would not care to describe activities which are meant for the upliftment of the soul. It's the challenge. In other words, what would be the use of this scripture asking us to control our mind, to control our senses, to engage in the process of devotional service, the ninefold process, if we could not do it, if we would be helpless in the grip of material nature? The second chapter, Vidyate Hridaya, of Bhagavatam, Vidyate Hridaya Grantim, it is described that, oh, you should cut the knot of doubt asunder and understand Atmani Ishvare, that the Atman, that the soul is the Ishvara, is controller. In other words, he can do something. That's a very important point. Of course, so in the Sanshaya might be risen, but please, dear philosopher, dear presenter of the lecture, consider the shloka prakriti kriyamana ni gunai karmani sarvasha ahankara vimudatma kataham iti manyate, which means I'm not really sure if I can really say this so nice in English. All the activities are conducted by the modes of material nature. The soul, due to ahankara, which means he's a fool, falsely identifying himself due to false ego, ahankara, considers himself the doer of those activities which are in actuality carried out by the modes of material nature. So here it is again said that the soul is carried away by the modes of material nature, and there are similar verses which are given in the 13th chapter, for instance, Bhunkte Prakriti Jhangu Prakriti Purushostho Purushastho Hi Bhunkte Prakriti Janguna Karanam Gunasangasya Sadasat Janma Jonishu. That yes, the conditioned soul is coming in contact with certain modes, and these are carrying it to the next material body, good or evil. So, how can we describe the soul as a doer? You may raise the argument that the Vedic scriptures have extolled or have said to us we should do something, and that they and you have said if we would be material, just forced to act by material nature, we could never take up spiritual activities of devotional service. But the Shastras, they say they say, on the other hand, they also say, that was the word also, that we are in the grips of nature. Mm-hmm. So it is said that the living entity has one most important faculty, which is the faculty of desire. And according to this desire which we have, we can control, we can, sorry, Krishna allows us to act in certain ways. Yesterday in other words, we are the dependent mover. Yesterday we were laughing because we were driving like, we left the temple quite late, and in order to save time, we did what one should not do. We did a race to Radha Desh. So we have a new driver in our preaching party, it's Bhakta Christian. Now Bhakta Christian knows, and Bhakta Christian wants to be on this preaching party, and he knows if he is not able to drive fast, it would be too dangerous, because our life is a beggar on the street who roams around. So we are mostly moving in our life, so it is the driver must be a good driver. So now in this car which we have, there is a certain mechanism which you have to know, and which if I would ask any one of you to drive that car, it is a very individualistic car, somehow you would not be able to know this mechanism. You can only know how to put in the gears by looking at a certain barometer. Barometer, Umdrehungszahlmesser. I don't know this in German. You know how that when the car accelerates, it tells you how much accelerate. So then you can know how to put in the gears, otherwise it will be problematic. The individualistic car won't like it. So Christian, somehow, because he desired to drive this, to do this service, he was understanding from this kind of barometer what would be the right word? What? Count what counter?
The speed.
Let us say, let us use some word. It doesn't matter. Counter, some counter, some counting. Yes. Or let us call it barometer. He understood that he has to bring this barometer in relation to the thing. So this example is good for something. Is good to show this. If you have the car, you can only move the car within certain limits, the limitations of this car. Now, according to your desire, you might find out how to move it in a different way. In the same way, we are conditioned by material existence. We are very conditioned. But according to our desire to know Krishna, to love Krishna, to engage in His service, He will give us the knowledge whereby which we can break free from this conditioning. He will not only now, He will give us the knowledge implanted, what is it, vairagya and vidya. Implant, vairagya, this is what I wanted to say. Vairagya is the power to apply knowledge. Sikamis also know that smoking is no good. But they have no vairagya. In other words, they can't do anything with this knowledge. It is not possible for them to apply it. The kamis also know that we race speedily towards hell with our environmental politics. But I can't do anything. Because they have no vairagya. They can't apply this knowledge in areas where it is demanding sense control. So, yes, the soul, if he desires to go back to Krishna, Krishna will lift the condition of the soul and will help him to advance in Krishna consciousness. Krishna conscious life is very easy if we just desire to become Krishna consciousness. We will be given all the necessary knowledge, all the necessary strengths arrive at with vairagya. We just have to have this lolyam, this intense greed to become Krishna conscious. Then our quivering situation in this material world can be stopped, and it is possible to obtain peace of mind and happy, healthy, and wise life in Krishna consciousness. But that desire must be strong. Otherwise, the quivering situation of our mind and body will continue even in the temple. Now, today is a very special day because it is on this particular day where we can pray to our great personality, Lord Balaram, to advance in Krishna consciousness. Lord Balaram, oh, he gives us vairagya vidya. He is described to be the spiritual master of all. It is described that you cannot go back to Krishna by physical strength. Therefore, bala, bala, bala means strength. Huh? Bala, that means spiritual strength. That spiritual strength can be obtained by our Lord, most merciful Lord Balaram. Balaram has been described as Prakash Vigraha of Krishna. That means a form of Krishna which is identical with himself. When you go through Braj, that means the land of Krishna. Around Vrindavan is a part of Raj. You see some temples where you find Krishna and Balaram both black. You have seen this maybe on slides? No? No one? Only silence answered the question. No one. There are these deities, for instance, in Nandagram, yes, great big temple in Nandagram, where you see Balaram and Krishna. Both are playing the flute, both look the same. So one time I was there and I was on my, I was lying down and flat obeisances, and then I heard a devotee who said, "This is speculation." You know, how I know everything since I'm 1 month in the Bhakta program devotee, isn't it? This is speculation. And at that time, I stood up and I really didn't know. I somehow felt it is not speculation, but I really didn't know the answer. So then when we were there with Narayan Maharaj, learned devotee, he said, I asked him, "Maharaj, this is Krishna Balaram, but usually we hear that Balaram's body is white like the foam of milk." "Yes," he said, "here he is black because he always thinks of Krishna. Therefore he is black." And Prabhupada, then we remembered Prabhupada's statement that he said, Balaram is like Krishna only that he is black. That's the only, white. He's a Prakash Vigraha. That means he is an identical form with Krishna. He is Krishna's brother. But because a brother is thinking, although he's the elder brother, he is constantly meditating on Krishna. Sometimes he is black. He becomes like that. This is very spiritual, you must admit. Lord Balaram's function in our Krishna consciousness, we said one function is a spiritual master of all who grants liberation. Next, he is protecting all the Vaishnavas. Balaram, he is a protector. That you can also see when you roam through Braj with the lips, with the chanting of the Maha Mantra on your lips. You will see, come upon Doji. Doji is the name of Balaram also. Where he is standing at a strategical point in Braj. I think it's, I can't tell you exactly what side it is. The opposite of north is south. The southern part of Braj. He's standing there guarding Braj, that no one comes into Braj. In fact, Balaram himself, that's an even another glorification of the Lord, but now let us stick to the protector. He is protecting also Krishna. He is a protector. When Balaram and Lord Krishna go out, Balaram becomes very protective of his younger brother. He is protecting Krishna and Krishna's devotees. It's another wonderful feature of Balaram. Then another feature of Balaram is he helps Krishna by becoming Sankarshan. And from Sankarshan so many different expansions come. That original Sankarshan, he helps Krishna expanding the Vaikuntha planets and expanding him, expanding the material world even. Lord Balaram also is expanding the holy dham. When you walk over Vrindavan, you should not have your shoes on, because this is Balaram. Vrindavan is manifested by Balaram. Krishna. So, to glorify Balaram even more, we want to read something, short presentation of Balaram and his activities from the first canto, chapter 11, text 17. You might like to read it in your laser reading time. You might like to repeat it and read it in your own language. But here it is in English. He is a divine son of Vasudev by his wife Rohini. He is also known as Rohini Nandana, the beloved son of Rohini. He was also entrusted to Nanda Maharaj along with his mother Rohini when Vasudev embraced imprisonment by mutual agreement with Kamsa. So Nanda Maharaj is also the foster father of Baladev along with Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna and Lord Baladev were constant companions from their very childhood, although they were stepbrothers. He is the plenary manifestation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore he is as good and powerful as Lord Krishna. He belongs to the Vishnu Tattva, the principle of Godhead. He attended the Swayamvara ceremony of Draupadi along with Sri Krishna. When Subhadra was kidnapped by Arjuna by the organized plan of Sri Krishna, Baladev was very angry with Arjuna and wanted to kill him at once. Sri Krishna, for the sake of his dear friend, fell at the feet of Lord Baladev and implored him not to be so angry. Sri Baladev was thus satisfied. Similarly, he was once very angry with the Kauravas and he wanted to throw their whole city into the depths of the Jamuna. As he was very powerful, he simply took his plow, buried it into the ground and dragged the whole city down into the Jamuna. It was tumbling and falling, the houses, and if the Kurus would not have given in in the last second, now they could have celebrated underwater their court festivals. But the Kauravas satisfied him by surrendering unto his divine lotus feet. He was actually the seventh son of Devaki prior to the birth of Lord Krishna. But by the will of the Lord, he was transferred to the womb of Rohini to escape the wrath of Kamsa. His other name is therefore Sankarshan, who is also the plenary portion of Sri Baladev. Because he is as powerful as Lord Krishna and can bestow spiritual power to the devotees, he is therefore known as Baladev. In the Vedas also it is enjoined that no one can know the Supreme Lord without being favored by Baladev. Bala means spiritual strength, not physical. Some less intelligent persons interpret bala is the strength of the body, but no one can have spiritual realization by physical strength. Physical strength ends with the end of the physical body, but spiritual strength follows the spirit soul to the next transmigration. And therefore the strength obtained by Baladev is never wasted. The strength is eternal, and thus Baladev is the original spiritual master of all devotees. Sri Baladev was also a class friend of Lord Shri Krishna as a student of Sandipani Muni. In his childhood, he killed many asuras along with Sri Krishna, and specifically, he killed the Denukasura at Talavan. During the Kurukshetra battle, he remained neutral, and he tried his best not to bring about the fight. He was in favor of Duryodhana, but still he remained neutral. He had shown Duryodhana all the tactics and techniques of club fighting. When there was a club fight between Duryodhana and Bhimasen, he was present on the spot. He was angry at Bhimasen when the latter struck Duryodhana on the thigh or below the belt, and he wanted to retaliate the unfair action. Lord Shri Krishna saved Bhima from his wrath, but he left the place at once, being disgusted at Bhimasen, and after his departure, Duryodhana fell to the ground to meet his death. The funeral ceremony of Abhimanyu, the son of Arjun, was performed by him as he was the maternal uncle. It was impossible to be performed by any one of the Pandavas, who were all overwhelmed with grief. At the last stage, he departed from this world by producing a great white snake from his mouth, and thus he was carried by Sheshanaga in the shape of a serpent. He left like this. Also, now we might get a little esoteric. Even Lakshman, he sat down, began to meditate, a great snake manifested, and he went. Lakshman is Balaram. Baladev's lovable temperament of being like a powerful personality, therefore Baladev, is also manifested by our other Baladev manifestation of Baladev, which is Lord Nityananda. There we could tell many stories, but today is Balaram. This is all a very great subject. So, Baladev has been also described as a mercy manifestation of the Lord. And today, let us therefore all glorify Baladev. Let us chant his name. Let us think of his form and activities. Let us eat his cake in love and devotion. And aspire for that Varuni beverage, even a drop of it, which is drunk by the Lord with great pleasure, so that sometimes his eyes roll and he cries, where is that Indra, that plaything of Sachi? Sachi is the wife of Indra. Now I am prepared to dismantle the whole universe. He's a little drunken, therefore he is clamoring like that. And why, you elders of the Yadu dynasty, why do you laugh and laugh about me? There's nothing funny. And then Lord Baladev, because he's extremely cultured, goes and takes a rest. Uncultured people, when they get into a drunken mood, they throw around their fists and use abusive language. Lord Baladev only becomes extremely temperamental, and the whole universe shakes from his power. Then he takes a rest. Yes, this is Baladev. So let us remember the past times, and this evening I would suggest that whoever gives helps us remembering Lord Balaram, we can dive into the nectar of some of his pastimes. They are unlimited. Very great personality. Now, last tip, last statement. After contemplating again on the first part of what was said, where we have arrived at the conclusion that our desire is our principal faculty which will decide how much we will be Atman Ishvare, how we will exercise our freedom so that we can also control our minds and senses. That desire should today become extremely intense. It is described, when you want to heat a pot with water, you can't bring your match. You have to bring a fire. In the similar way, if you want to become Krishna conscious, lolyam, greed, intense hankering, even Prabhupada said one should learn the simple art to cry for Krishna. Not before the deities, by the way. This is not recommended. But one should learn to become intensive in his desire. So today we can praise in such a way to Lord Balaram, that he please give us the strength to not become a prey to our bodies and minds, our restless minds, Kali Yuga minds. And so please let us engage in Lord Krishna's service. We can also pray to our spiritual master, since he is the representative of Lord Balaram, that he please give us some mercy, and in this way, this day can be a wonderful day in Krishna consciousness. So Hare Krishna. My presentation is exhausted. Are there questions? No, everything is clear. All close to Srila Prabhupada.
I had a question that you explained that Prabhupada becomes black. I was thinking of Krishna. Is there any explanation why Gopinath becomes white?
Now, I can only give one explanation, and then I might ask other devotees, maybe our Gopal, Bhatta Gopal Prabhu, if there is some information. All I know is that Prabhupada, he once said that Krishna is black, but not like the black of this material world. See, that frequency of light which we interpret with our senses to be black, this is what the perception of black color is. It is a frequency of light which is interpreted by our senses as black. Therefore, some people say there is no absolute black in this world, and there is no black color really as a thing. There's some scientists say plainly. So Krishna is not, this is not like that, Krishna's kala. It is a spiritual, it is altogether spiritual. So that is the only comment which I can make on your question. It may not be an explanation, or there may be better answers. So it's only a comment. Does any one of you have more information on this? We might ask this to Bhakti Charu Maharaj. He might give us a more satisfying answer. Very nice. Yeah, yes, it's a fact we should. I also want to know this. Good.
When they said the soul is immovable.
Yes. Immovable means, just like in this example of the sun, the sun is not carried away by the gunas. The sun is not carried away by what is done here. You cannot, for instance, take the sun down. Only Krishna might do such a thing, if he pleases. But usually the sun is immovable. In the same way, the soul cannot be touched by the material elements. Now one might argue, but listen, if I push some bhakta on the floor, because this is a very bad example. If I push a person, or if a car hits upon a person and the person is pushed, then is the soul not moved? And my understanding here is that you push the material elements of the material body, but the soul as a spiritual entity, it is not registering the force of material energy upon it. This is also an interesting question, actually. Let us also ask this question to Bhakti Charu Maharaj, because this is also a very limited explanation, certainly. How would you answer this? The soul is immovable, and it's an interesting question, isn't it? If you push someone, then he flies around, and the soul has not left him, right? He's there, the soul is moving along the push. I only can say it's in the spiritual dimension, but I also feel in my heart that as a preacher, this answer doesn't suffice to convince someone. Any comment to this? It's a very interesting question. Yes, I must say, I cannot answer it very satisfactorily. So we should register this question and see if we can give Bhakti Charu Maharaj a hard time, or if he knows it immediately. It's a great, interesting question. So I won't try to speculate on it. So thank you very much. By your two questions, you have shown me that I have lots to learn. And in this way, this day has already started to be beneficial for me. It's very nice to always be reminded of one's small position before the glorious Lord, the glorious Vaishnavas, the most healthy position in Krishna consciousness. Let us all pray today to Lord Balaram and this way make this day get all the spiritual strengths which we require and we need it from all directions. Shri Balaram ki Jai.